This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Morning Run on this Tuesday, 14th of May 2019. It's 6 a.m. and you're with Julian Ng, Lin Mark and Wong Xiaoning. Good morning, people.
Good morning.
How are you guys this morning?
Not too bad. Did you almost forget your last name there, Julian?
I did. It's too early in the morning.
It is. It's 6 o'clock. What to do?
And it's only Tuesday.
All right. So to kick things up a bit, we usually discuss stuff that is on the other side of business. I wouldn't say lighter. Sometimes we discuss very heavy stuff. What do we have this morning?
So we are going to have a discussion on whether or not we should be speaking our mother tongues in front of other people who might not understand them. So there was a netizen who said that particularly Chinese Malaysians shouldn't speak in their own Chinese languages in front of other races because, you know, it could be rude. So that's what we're going to talk about.
And I'm going to talk about, are we more easily offended nowadays?
Are we more easily offended? And also related to that, coming up next, we have the science of anger. And if you have anything to say to us, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And we'll be taking a break and coming back. In the meantime, here's Till I Hear It From You by the Gin Blossoms, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I Feel a Whole Lot Better by the Birds. And you're with Morning Run, Julian Ng, Lin Mark and Wong Xiaoning here with you. From The Guardian, an article about the signs of anger. Anger is very instinctive. Anger is natural and triggers the flight or fight response. There are supposedly benefits to anger. It is a powerful motivator and it may make others view us positively, according to research. And it may, in fact, result in pushing up our earnings.
Okay, we should be more angry in the office then, since that will help with our earnings.
Some of us perennially already are.
Rage.
Are you Bruce Banner,
yeah.
Julian?
No, I don't think so.
You're not turning into a green thing
anytime soon. I might be Incredible Hulk for a bit more than Bruce Banner, I think.
Okay. So, the article from The Guardian is quite interesting because it goes into some of the ways that age, gender, mental health may influence how we experience anger. It's compiled quite a lot of research as well on, for example, how women feel anger differently from men and whether or not that is actually the case, because there doesn't seem to be much of a consensus on it. There's some research that says, you know, women are just better at controlling their emotions, so men display their anger more frequently, but it doesn't mean that the feeling of anger is any less in women. Some say that there is a brain biology element to it, so the particular area is, I think, the orbital frontal cortex, so that controls that's the area that controls your anger impulses, and apparently that is larger in women than in men. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of consensus on this subject.
I think societal expectations also play a role. I mean, women are supposed to be calmer, gentler, softer, right? So maybe from young, you're kind of brainwashed that. So you're told to, like, don't get mad. You know, you're a woman, calm down. Which I don't agree.
It might not even be factually correct, right? Because I'm sure there are equal number of angry men as angry women.
But we just maybe don't display it so much. I don't think the feeling is not there. I think we all feel anger. It's just that what do we do with that feeling? Do we manifest it out or do we just suppress it?
Yeah, and you see it a lot, particularly with how parents or how authority figures deal with children. When a little boy has a temper tantrum or, you know, throws something, they're like, oh, you know, he's just being a boy. That's to be expected. He's not really reined in as much as a girl would be in the same situation, because girls are told, okay, you have to be ladylike. You have to be, I guess, demure. Is that the word?
Gentle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Girls don't do that. That's something that I hear quite often, actually.
Okay. And so what do you guys think, being women? Do you think that that kind of pronouncements or admonishments should be practiced?
I dislike it intensely.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be telling children not to do something just because you're a girl, because you're a girl or you're a boy, because you're enforcing societal expectations that have... negative connotations later in life. It's just that a lot of people don't realize it because this is something that was done to them as a child. And, you know, you grow up and, I turned out fine. Therefore, it should be okay to practice it on my kids. That's not necessarily the case. So I feel like you need to do a lot more research.
No gender stereotyping for me. Mm-hmm. I think that's bad, right?
So girls have a right to be angry.
Yeah, I think we all have the right to be angry, but I guess what you do with your anger is the difference.
Because if you turn it on the flip side, right, allowing boys to throw tantrums willy-nilly is not good for them either, because at the end of the day, they will not have as much control over their more extreme emotions, and that can come back to bite them in later life.
Believe it or not, this article tries to shed a positive light on anger. According to one research in 2010, it can serve as a powerful motivator. Another research says that participants were found more supportive of President Bill Clinton when they viewed him as expressing anger than sadness about the Monica Lewinsky case. So, this guy, this president who cheated on his wife, got more support when he displayed anger rather than sadness about the case.
Well, look at President Trump, right? He seems to have his fair share of supporters. He always seems to be in a rage, right? I'm going to do this, tweet out that. Maybe it's true.
Maybe it speaks to this kind of inner feeling that a lot of people dampen down. Like, maybe you are secretly angry at the way the world works, but you're not allowed to say it. You feel constrained by your daily life. So seeing a world leader that is not afraid to say, I don't like this, I'm angry about this, that makes you identify more with them because they can express this feeling that you can't.
That's true. Yeah, I guess so.
Another research found also that people who are angry will get higher status position and salary, higher salaries as well as a job candidate. So let us know what you think about this topic. Are you in a position to harness your anger for the greater good of the world? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And we'll take a break right now and we'll come back with more discussion about emotions. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Young Blood by The Naked and Famous. And we're also asking the question of whether young people today, or in fact older people, get offended easily. Ishat Manji spoke to Time and she says it's about time we all stop getting offended. And she argues that when we allow ourselves to take offense, we miss out on opportunity to learn from other people with views that differ from our own.
I don't actually agree with her in the sense that I think, if anything, I think society or people seem to be nastier. And I think a lot of it is social media, because you can comment instantly. And you don't have this face-to-face interaction when you tell someone that you don't like them or you don't like their comment. And you don't have to see how they react, right? And you can send it instantaneously. So there's not... Sometimes, when you're mad or you don't agree, and it takes... that you think about it for a while and then you reflect on it, right? And then maybe you communicate with that person face-to-face. Your temper down what you say to the person. But on social media, it's almost instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not necessarily the best, right?
But that's what she's saying, right? She's agreeing with you.
I thought she says you're supposed to learn from the criticism.
She's just saying don't take offense. I mean, there is a lot of offense out there, whether in real life or online. So she said stop being offended.
Yeah, I think the taking offense in the case that you described, Shaning, is actually what comes before the essentially cyberbullying, right? So when you see this phenomenon happening online, you see someone makes a statement and then the social media comments just start pouring in, and they're all, it's vitriol. Right. And
yes,
it's really nasty messages. But what prompted that nastiness, that it was that a lot of the times these people saw the statement, felt instinctively offended, and then used social media, which is quite a dehumanizing platform, in order to be able to instantly send their hate towards the person who made the statement.
So you're saying that you disagree because you should be offended by these people.
No, I think that, okay, because part of our article says that, you know, the schools are trying to teach people how not to be offensive, right? I.e., in other words, they're trying to tell people don't say nasty things online, be kinder. But my point is, it's not working. People are still offensive, all right?
Yes.
And social media makes it really easy to be offensive and instantaneously.
So is there a point or a case to take that offensiveness and for the rest of us not to be offended by it so that we can learn something out of it as what she is proposing?
I suppose you have to distill what is useful and maybe what is genuine versus some people just like to spread the hate, right?
It's also just... rather than immediately slamming someone for having an opinion you don't like, it's saying, it's asking, why do you have this opinion? Let's have that conversation. And that is the kind of interaction that is missing from a lot of online conversations. Usually what happens in social media, in online spaces, is that person A says this, person B says, I don't agree, therefore you're a bad person.
It's a one-line reply.
Yes.
Exactly. There's no conversation.
Exactly. There's no question of why do you have this? Why do you think this way? So that is what we're missing out, you know, that diversity of thought and discussion. When you get offended, you don't have that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think especially for this country, we are constantly stepping on eggshells. There are a lot of no-go areas as far as our public and private discussions are concerned. You know, due to our history, I mean, we commemorated May 13th yesterday. And I think that this country would do very well to be more open about certain discussions that we are having, you know, about all these so-called sensitive issues, you know, about race, about religion, because I think that those are important conversations that need to be had.
Yeah, it's also a sign that we are mature enough to have this.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, after so many years of independence, I think we can have these discussions in a thoughtful and also considerate way. I'm not saying not to have the discussions, but like Lynn says, it has to be on a good platform where people are open-minded to everything, right?
Yes, and I'm just trying to also link this back to our previous conversation about anger, right? How to harness that anger for something that's more positive. And I'm just wondering whether there is that safe space that we can allow ourselves to be slightly offended, slightly angry, so that we can bring out some conversations to push it to a higher level, slightly higher level.
Yeah, I think the important thing is just that if you get offended, not to shut yourself down from having that discussion. It's okay to be offended, but it's what's not on is when you say, I'm offended, therefore conversation ends here. Because
right,
I don't want
wrong.
To. Yeah, because yeah. You're just offending me more.
Okay, and as always, we'd love to hear from you about what you think. Should you be angry? Should you be offended? Should we check our offensive, our feelings of being offended just to get better conversations out of people? And we'd love to hear from you. We're coming up to the 6:30 news. And to take you there, here's Travis. Why Does It Always Rain on Me? BFM 89.9. This morning, Run, you're with Julian Lin as well as Wang Xiaoning. And we're asking the question of whether you should speak your mother tongue if your mother tongue is not English in front of other people. Lim Wei Jiet, who is a very public commentator on all things legal, this time he has tweeted out something different. And he says one thing he detests when Chinese Malaysians speak to each other in Mandarin or Cantonese in the presence of other races who don't understand the language.
Yeah, so I'm Chinese, but I don't speak the language. I am a banana, quite sadly.
And me too, actually.
Yeah, same here.
Oh,
three
are we
bananas.
We're all bananas.
I'm sorry.
Well, I do understand Mandarin and Cantonese, but I don't speak it fluently, I have to confess.
I don't understand Mandarin at all. And actually, this was one thing that annoyed me a little bit, especially when they knew, when my friends or my acquaintance, whoever I was with, when they know that I'm a banana and then they kind of
just
start speaking
off in Mandarin.
Yeah, they
Cantonese.
Kind of disappear off into Mandarin. And then I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to whip out my phone and sit here in the corner because it's not like I can take part in this conversation. Yeah, so I understand the sentiment completely, I think.
But I think it's a good sign, though, if you come into such situations because you don't only just hang around your own little clique of English-speaking people. Right? You hang around with a more diverse set of people.
Yeah, this was more, I think this happened more, quite a lot in university, because you do get kind of all sorts in university, mm-hmm. right? So, to be fair, a lot of the time, I think it wasn't deliberate, you know, because there's a difference between you just being comfortable, more comfortable in your mother tongue. And then when you're with other people who speak your mother tongue, you just kind of automatically start speaking it versus when you do it in a way that's meant to be exclusionary, because you are deliberately pushing aside the people who don't speak it. I do think that when you don't realize, when you do this without thinking about it, there is still an element of inconsiderateness there, but you know it's not a deliberate move to make. You know.
So you're not as angry as Wayjet is about it.
But yeah. Wayjet highlights that he's seen this in professional settings and team lunches, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that makes it worse because, for example, in the office, and you're talking to your colleagues, it's kind of exclusionary if you purposely speak Mandarin and half the room doesn't understand you.
Yes.
Right? Maybe less so in a social setting.
It's but inefficient and it's it lowers down productivity. Yeah, I mean, just to take a very clinical view about it.
No, and it's kind of rude, right? Are you trying to purposely exclude these people in this discussion?
Correct. So what? Then my question becomes, what exactly is the official language of choice? I mean, we live in Malaysia and in Malaysia, the official language is Bahasa, and my Bahasa is really bad. And would it be offensive if we just assume that English is the official language of communication?
Well, I guess in my line, I mean, at BFM, which is an English-speaking radio station, it's not implausible that all of us would be speaking English since we are on radio in English. Mm-hmm. And also in my previous line, in fund management, English was the language. Right? All the reports are in English. We communicate in English. So I think that's a very neutral language to use in the office to discuss things.
Yeah, it would depend on the environment, I think. So, for example, let's talk in terms of media houses, because, you know, different media organizations, vernacular papers, for example. If we worked in a Malay paper, then me as an English-speaking person, I wouldn't go in there expecting everyone to accommodate me as the only English-speaking person. I would make the effort to speak Malay because that would be the general language of communication. Same in a Chinese paper. But I think you mentioned something that, you know, that when you see this happening in professional settings, Shaning, versus social settings, you feel like it's a little bit worse in a professional setting. I would actually feel it's worse in a social setting because when you're at a team lunch, for example, and you've got people who the idea is that you're supposed to socialize and you're supposed to get to know people and to speak in a dialect or a language that other people, that other segments of the team may not understand, I feel is more deliberately exclusionary in that situation.
Yeah, I think Lin Wayjet is focusing on a professional setting, and I agree with you, Lin. So what if it's a social setting where we don't really know what the official language is, right? So if we are in a circle where Malay, for example, is being spoken, and that is, after all, the national language, would it be offensive? Who is the one who should take offense here? And we go back one full circle here to this idea about anger and offense, right? Who is right and who is wrong? In that case, when people are speaking in Malay, for example, should the English speaker then speak the same language, speak Malay?
I would if everyone else was speaking Malay, yeah, you know, despite the fact that my Malay is also terrible.
Yeah, you would kind of follow the majority, right,
mm-hmm.
in a way. And we are Malaysian. We do speak Malay badly or well. We do know some of it.
Yeah. So I think with Malay and English, it's kind of fairer to assume that other people will speak it because we are, you know, everyone is taught it in schools. Whereas Chinese, not everyone takes Chinese in schools and not everyone has that familial situation that, you know, where they speak Chinese in the home. So Chinese is a little bit more of a difficult language for everyone to grasp.
Okay, we'd love to hear from you. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And we'll be coming back with more discussions. BFM 89.9. And this is The Morning Run. It's 6:50 in the morning. You're with Julian, Lin and Xiaoning. And we've been talking about anger and offense and about people being rude, speaking the mother tongue when they're not supposed to. And so what have we got? We have a lot of comments from you guys. Thank you very much.
So Michael tweeted in to say, in regards to the anger discussion, it's an emotion for every human being, no positive or negative. Only humans give it a grade. God didn't. Yeah, I guess, you know, we tend to think of anger as a negative thing in the sense that I think it makes people uncomfortable in a social setting when someone is angry and other people are maybe not. But yeah, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's not like we can entirely suppress the emotion. We just have to figure out ways to deal with it.
That's right. But also, I think that there is this inertia and momentum of there being too much anger in the world. And therefore, the most natural response is to put a negative light on anger, right? And so I think discussions like that are good because sometimes it highlights, you know, the benefits of some of these emotions.
But then sometimes anger can also drive change because when you're righteously angry, you know...
Righteously.
Righteously angry.
You know, so the climate change protests, for example, come to mind. You know, these kids who are angry about, you know, the state of the environment, who are angry about the fact that, you know, what kind of climate are they going to live in when they are adults? They turned out to protest and they enforce change.
Correct. In fact, the birthday marches, for example, were drawing on people's anger as well, people's anger on kleptocracy and things like that. That can lead to change, actually. Mm-hmm.
Which it did.
Yes,
for us.
Absolutely. Hopefully.
And continue to change.
Fingers crossed. So we have some other WhatsApps as well, right?
Yes, we have Mr. Tan who's been talking about language, and he says he's been in offices where a lower level supervisor speaks in Mandarin, leaving the non-Chinese and bananas in the room totally lost. And he thinks it's very, very unprofessional. But he thinks it's a lot worse in social settings, and that's when mini groups starts to form. He says that we are Malaysians first and other races second.
Yeah. What does that mean in terms of language? So when we have a very diverse nation such as ours, should that just be one language tolerance towards one kind of language, or should that be other languages? And why should bananas exist? You know, you bananas go out there and learn a language.
No, I think it's just being mindful of the crowd that you're in, right? I mean,
it sounds very contradictory to me because on the one hand, we say don't be rude, right? And on another hand, we are saying appreciate this very diverse nation of ours.
We do, but then I think it's just being civil when you look around you and think that can everybody understand me? It should be almost second nature. And then choosing the language that most people can understand.
Vanessa, it's also arrogant to assume that non-Chinese don't understand Chinese. Aha. So don't go dissing other people in your mother tongue, thinking that the other doesn't understand you.
Yes, I've had this experience actually, because I had a French teacher in university who spoke perfectly fluent Mandarin because he spent a few years in China teaching French, and he had a lot of stories of the things he'd overheard people saying about him. So you know that's not also a very nice position to be in. So let's try not to do that.
And Jason wrote in and he says that he's half Indian and sometimes his Indian friends will just break out into Tamil out of nowhere. And then he looks and stares at the phone, right? And he feels excluded, but he doesn't speak Tamil even though he looks half Tamil.
Yes, I completely feel this because I've been in this exact same situation with multiple dialects of Chinese because I understand a couple of them, but I speak them very poorly. So it does feel, it makes you feel a little bit self-conscious in social settings when everyone else can speak it and you don't. But at the same time, I don't say anything in those situations because I'm the only one there that doesn't speak Chinese. So, you know, it's kind of embracing the fact that in that sense, in that situation, I'm the minority. I don't get to dictate the language that's being spoken.
Okay, from Anne, it's almost like a law to speak Malay in government offices, especially in Putrajaya. She has encountered several unpleasant experiences when she conversed in English in those offices.
I'm curious as to what those unpleasant experiences are, actually, because I've also experienced this, but usually what happens is that if I speak to them in English and they just reply to me in Malay, and we kind of get along just fine because we both understand each other. We're just not confident enough to speak the other language, maybe.
Mike Yip, one of the gifts of living in this country is that we are racially diverse. We have the ability to complete sentences seamlessly in three languages. Thank you very much for your comments and your responses to our discussion. And keep them coming. We are coming up to 7 a.m. news. And to take us there, here's Elevator Love Letters by Stars. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.